Welcome to Book Bumble, the podcast for people who love to read. In each episode, we'll introduce a stack of books that are tied together with a common connection to help take a deeper dive into each story.
We provide a space to talk books that is friendly and deep with a little hint of geek.
I'm Laura Pleasance.
And I'm Leslie Hopping.
And we are two friends who love spending time with our families, visiting libraries, and reading great books.
We are so happy you joined us. Let's get started.
Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Laura. Welcome, everyone. This is episode 19 of season 2. Today, our stack of books is tied together with the bright and happy common theme of climate disasters. Sorry, that's not a funny topic, but
again, this is one of my favorite kind of subgenres. I love this kind of stuff, and I'm not a doom and gloom person, but I love reading about this kind of stuff.
It's just really, I like the near future things.
You too.
It's very interesting.
Well, what are you going to get us started off with?
All right. Well, I would like to share a book that we have both read, The Great Transition by Nick Fuller Googins, and it came out in August of 2023. I saw this book everywhere on social media and had to read it. The premise reminded me a little of Station 11, but I felt it ended up being very different, but still very, very good. Let me first say that Nick Fuller Googins is actually a fourth grade teacher. Fourth grade. Like me and like you, just retired from teaching fourth grade. And I listened to a short video about how when he got the box of his printed books, that he opened them with his students. And after they took them in their hands, he quickly took them back because he thought about the fact that it wasn't quite appropriate for them yet. But then the video is him sharing kind of what and how he told the kids about his book, because of course they wanted to know what it was about.
Yes, how exciting. And
it was just the cutest little video. Because when reading this book, I wouldn't have thought, a fourth grade teacher wrote this book. But when he was talking about it, he was a fourth grade teacher.
Yeah, that's so awesome. So I wish that I could read my story, The Blue Rose, that I've talked about before. You could share your
The Neighborhood
book. Yes.
But we'll spare you.
We'll spare you.
From that. So here's the starting point for The Great Transition. Climate devastation has happened, coming as wildfires and floods and everything else you could think of. But years later, a climate utopia is formed and everyone comes together to create a space and place where people can thrive and start again. Everyone has a job, everyone does their part. Unfortunately, some of the greediest and richest of the population begin getting killed off because they are seen as the people who were looked at as kind of the reason the rebuilding had to happen. So there's a group of people that kind of just want to get rid of them, that they're the reason the climate devastation happened and all the disasters. So the population begins to revolt against the system that's been put in place, and we know that never goes well. So Emmy Vargas was born post-transition, and both of her parents were very active in the rescue and transition that took place. They fought wildfires, fixed flooding, all to create a better world. But now their marriage is not going well because it's full of secrets. Her dad just wants to be a dad and live in a peaceful existence, while Emmy's mother keeps pushing and fighting for an even better life. As their marriage hits a low point, Emmy's mother disappears, and Emmy and her father suspect the worst. Because the day she disappears is the day a group of rebels begin killing off some of the greediest of the leaders, claiming to be making the world a better place. This book takes us into an eerily near future world with the settings and places that are currently large cities and important places in our own world, and it has us dig into the realities of inequality and how the sharing of knowledge can be very powerful. This story examines who is in power, the workers or the leaders. I don't think it's a politically embedded story. I didn't feel that way. It's completely fictional in a dystopian way, and it's very easy to understand and feel for each and every character in the book. the places feel real because they are, and the people are just trying to do the best they can. They're parents, they're survivors, they make decisions based on fact and sometimes based purely on emotion. I just really enjoyed the journey that Nick Fuller Googans took me on. And if you like stories like Station 11, I think you'll really like this one as well.
I do too. This one was different from a lot of the dystopian disaster stories that we've read, because the people are living in a world that they have quote unquote fixed.
Right.
You know, they've made it safe. Mm-hmm. They've had to do a lot of changing. They can't live in certain places. They have to live in different ways, but they're not like going around scavenging and hunting.
They're past that.
Yeah,
stage.
And they've created a world in which people can survive with the climate.
Right.
It's also different in that it's a bit of a thriller.
There's
some spy kind of things going on. There are people that, like you said, want to get back at these big corporations.
Some espionage type actions.
And they are taking matters into their own hands. So I liked that aspect of it too. It was just, it was a different take on these kind of dystopian worlds. And I really enjoyed that.
And I really love the rebuilding stages when I read these kinds of books. Mm-hmm. I like that rebuilding, like, oh, we're here. How do we rebuild? Like Station 11. How do we rebuild what we have?
And go forward.
And go forward. So this was a bit of a surprise, but I realized that I really liked this too.
Mm-hmm. And I liked those flashback scenes. Mm-hmm. It would flash back to Emmy's mom and dad and what they were doing during the Great Transition.
Mm-hmm.
And this hard work that they, you know, I mean, that part is interesting to think about too. New York City is completely flooded, so what are we going to do? And it talks about how they met and the people that they were then as opposed to the people that they are now. It was very, very good.
Very
compelling.
Good. Very compelling.
I really liked it.
And the pace, like you said, that little bit of a spy aspect really propulsed it forward.
Yeah.
Didn't sit in it.
I think it could be a good movie.
Definitely.
Because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Moving, those moving pieces, the excitement of it.
I agree.
If
you haven't seen it yet, you'll want to check that out. That is The Great Transition by Nick Fuller Googans.
Awesome.
Fellow fourth grade teacher.
Fellow fourth grader. Okay, I've got another one I want to share. This is real different from The Great Transition, kind of in that way that we were just talking about. So it's a different world. It's called Trashlands. It's by Allison Stein. Came out in 2021. I'm a huge fan of the genre. And this book in particular was a winner for me because do like the books. Again, I know this is weird if you know me, but I do like the books that are set in this kind of desperate world.
Mm-hmm.
I would never want to be in the desperate world. I don't think I could survive for very long because I would not be able to kill. I mean, I guess I could. I wouldn't know how to do it.
Right.
Is basically what
I'm
saying.
Well, I'm kind of glad
I would want
to
survive. Yeah. I would want to survive, but I don't know if I could. I would need to have a community of people around me.
But not everyone.
But only certain people, Okay, anybody that's a reader, yes, could be in my group.
Okay.
So, Allison Stein also wrote a book called Road Out of Winter, which is another book set in a time after a climate disaster, and I'm dying to read this one as well. I noticed this book on the library shelf where I found Goodnight Irene, which we talked about in a previous episode. It was on that shelf of books recommended by other patrons. I had never heard of this book. Just kind of, intrigued by the title, and then when I found out it was this mm-hmm. dystopian world, I
slapped other people had to get out of the way at it. No.
I had to tackle people. And I just thought, like, if another patron yeah. has put this on here, it must be
yeah.
good. And it real. I'm just super happy that whoever you are, that you put this on the shelf. If you like this kind of post-apocalyptic fiction, mm-hmm. dystopian, you're going to love Trashlands. It's set a few generations from now, far enough into the future that most people don't remember the internet. Like, if you remember the internet, you're old in this book.
Right, okay.
They don't remember things like ice cream or playgrounds, all this kind of stuff that today we're thinking, what? It takes place in Scrappalachia, which is southeastern Ohio.
Oh.
And it's after a time of floods, fires, extreme weather has changed life the way we experience it now. So Coral is what is called a plucker. She's a person who plucks plastic from the water to be turned into bricks, which are used for building.
Okay.
She and her father, who's kind of like her found father, his name is Mr. Fall, and her partner Trillium, have come to the Trashlands, which is this community of people living, mostly they live in old cars in a junkyard, and it surrounds a strip club, or the strip club is kind of in the middle of this junkyard. Okay. Even though it might be time for them to move on, they stay because this is the place Coral hopes her son, Shanghai, might remember and return to. Because Shanghai, her son, was kidnapped as a young child, and they would kidnap children and send them to work in factories that are filled with other stolen children who do this pre-work needed to make these plastic bricks because they have small hands. They can do this work. So Coral is trying to save enough money to rescue her child when a reporter from a city comes to the Trashlands for his own reasons, and Coral begins to see that she might have a choice in life.
Okay.
Okay, so
I'm intrigued.
It's so good. So while Coral is the main character of the book, it does have other chapters covering multiple perspectives. So we get to know Mr. Fall, her father. So he found Coral as a baby and raised her. We get to know Foxglove and Summer, who are both dancers at the strip club.
Oh, so, okay, wait, sorry, I have to interrupt you. So the strip club is an active strip club. Mm-hmm. It's not like an old strip club.
Right. Gotcha. It's an active strip club. And these women are both dancing for different reasons. We get to know Rattlesnake Master, who's the owner of the club. We get to know Trillium, who is Coral's partner, and he earns a living as a tattoo artist. He's quite a bit older than Coral.
Okay.
We do get the point of view of Shanghai, Coral's son, Miami, the reporter, and of course Coral. And it's not confusing.
Okay.
I loved getting into the heads of these characters to see what made them tick and learn their backstories. They're really richly written. They're all brave, and I especially loved the character of Mr. Fall.
Okay.
And this is just, I mean, this is a world where kind of it is what it is. You get what you get, and mm-hmm. you don't throw a fit. People come and go. You might lose someone, and it's just the way it is.
You just move on.
You don't fall mm-hmm. apart. You have to keep living. I thought the world building in this book was spot on. This is a time when the vast majority of people are not named with traditional names like we have, but if you kind of put that together saying their names, they're named after places or things in the natural world, some of which don't exist any longer.
Mm-hmm.
So names like Ibex or Mangrove or New Orleans, these are people's names.
Okay.
They also don't, the people in this time really don't know how old they are, but they can tell approximate ages based on what they remember.
Okay.
So Mr. Fall is an older man because he remembers things like schools and TVs and drive-ins and bowling. Okay. And I just loved That's how that was all throughout the book. Mm-hmm. She would have things about these different things that people would remember or not remember. And that was kind of a thread that tied everything together that I really liked. Yeah,
that's how an author just thinks of that as...
Yeah, how did she think of that?
It's just what a great way to organize cool. that.
So plastic is currency in this world, and it's also everywhere. And they use it to make things needed in daily life that have disappeared from the world, like shoes.
Okay.
They can't believe that people once threw plastic away after using it once. Mm-hmm. And they also have different levels of plastic. They can tell if the plastic has already been recycled. The most valuable plastic is the plastic that you would find that's never been recycled. Mm-hmm. And I, again, loved the descriptions of the things. Some of the things are named plastic and some are not. They don't know what it was used for, but they guess. Right. But you can figure it out based on the description.
Yes.
And that to me is such an interesting tie-in because you're thinking, oh, I know what that is.
Right, but why would they? Right. That is interesting.
It was really cool. I loved the development of coral. She was an artist. Hmm. And so her job was as a plucker, but she was an artist and she would make plastic sculptures and then just leave them around for people to find and wonder at.
That's neat.
She didn't even care who found them. She just kind of got started in this and she liked the idea that somebody might find this. So she had to do this plucking for money, but art was her essence and her soul. She's also a mother, and the depiction of her mother's love, but also her conflicting feelings about motherhood felt very real to this world they lived in. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was hard to have a child.
Right, if you're living in your car.
Right, and you're having to... They didn't live in a car. Most people did. That. They lived in, like, a bigger vehicle.
Okay.
But I don't want to spoil.
Okay.
And just, you know, you didn't have any real support.
Right.
Or know how... She didn't have a mother. So she didn't really know how to be a mother. So that was... That part of her character, I thought, was very, very well drawn. This book is about love in a very dark time and how that love helps people keep going and not to decide to give up. It's a grim world, but the relationships between the characters provide the hope. And that's what I think I love about these grim, mostly grim worlds, is that there's always this hope, friendship, love. There's something that you're trying to do or look forward to or make better. So they're not like these depressing books.
Right.
This book has a good ending.
Okay.
For the time, you know, it's not like the world becomes normal again. but that's Trashlands by Alison Stein. A very different feeling to The Great Transition as far as the world is. But just, I loved it. Mm. So whoever put it on that shelf, I thank you.
I really think, too, you love seeing that growth in characters. Mm-hmm. And when does that growth happen? When they're put in tough times.
Yeah.
So you also get that depth of character.
Right.
And how they make or break.
Yeah, and it's just so interesting to think about what you would do. I mean, if your child was kidnapped.
Oh, my gosh.
You would do everything possible. You would drop everything. But in this world, they couldn't drop everything. But yet, she never forgot about him, and she was always working to find him and save him.
Right.
It's just...
All the things that I would do, they didn't have that set in place.
And just to... And just to get to know these different characters who had to do different things to survive in this world, it's really good. So if you like a character-driven... You also like this post-apocalyptic kind of world, you're gonna love it.
All right.
Okay. Woo. What you got?
All right. Well, I want to share another book that's kind of in between the two.
Okay, cool. I would say.
Literally just closed it yesterday.
Okay.
And it is called Wool, which my husband says I say those words weird because I'm from Ohio. So I'll spell it W-O-O-L.
Okay.
Wool, like from a sheep.
Okay.
By Hugh Howey. And it's the first in the Silo series. There are five books. Ooh. And this is the first one. It came out in 2011.
Oh, wow.
I know. So I was actually, we don't always do this. We read to read. Mm-hmm. We find books we like and we read them and then we come back with a story.
Right.
But we really found that we were reading some climate change disaster books.
Right.
And I needed to look for one more. And so I was just kind of searching the internet for ones that might strike me as interesting. And this one came up. I'd never heard of it. It's a New York Times bestseller.
Ooh, wow. Love
they
it.
Have made a series on Apple TV Plus.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Like, it's a big deal. You know, Ann Perkins from The Office, from Parks and Rec. She is one of the people in the TV series.
Love it.
I mean, so it just came out last year. It has 10 episodes already, so it's the first book, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I like the way you said, do you know Ann Perkins? Just the name of the character. You didn't say her real name. But
no,
yeah.
Ann Perkins.
Because we both love Parks and Rec.
Yes.
Okay.
So here's the starting point for Wool. We have Jules, who is living in what they call the Down Deep. We have these characters. Let me first explain. They're in what's called a silo. And It really is, if you described it correctly, it really is like a farm silo, but it's placed underground.
Okay.
And it goes all the way down to, I think, 140 something levels.
Okay.
And as you go down, the depth of jobs change. So at the very down deep, they call it, that's where all the mechanical, the generators, the water, all of that come from there.
Okay.
And as you up there are different types of jobs. Each set of jobs has different overalls, different colors.
Okay.
So you can identify. There are porters that run up and down the steps to exchange things. There are dirt farms and hydroponics every 30 levels where they're growing food. That's where they bury people, or in the dirt farms, and then they use that as their dirt for their plants.
Okay.
It's all very self-sufficient. But every so often, they have a revolution.
Oh, okay.
So, and they all kind of know this, and it's kind of back, the reason I said, was referring back to your story, is because the oldest of the people know that this happens.
Okay.
But it's not written anywhere. Mm-hmm. They just know that every once in a while it happens. So any things, bad things that are going on, they handle those with the police by sending them out. And one of the biggest things you can say to get sent out of the silo and into this horrific earth that is not habitable is to say you want to go outside.
Okay, so if you say you want to go outside, you are going.
You're going, because they don't want anyone to start another revolution.
Okay.
Because there have been some questions about, is the Earth really livable, and are they keeping us down here? Why can't we go outside? And every so often, this comes up again. They think they're all alone in the world. They have one big viewing glass on the top floor where they can see outside, and it just looks horrific. It's all brown, everything's dead. But if you get sent outside, it's for cleaning. That's why it's called Wool. They set you up in a big suit, and your job, your last job for the silo, is to take out these wool scrubbing things, like what are they called? The little scrubbing.
Scrubbers?
Mm-hmm. Wool scrubbers. You can buy them. I know. I'm trying to think of what they're called. And you go out to that big window, and your last job for the
Brillo
silo
pads.
Is Brillo pads.
But I don't think those are wool.
No, but that's okay, the thought. They have them in their hands when they go out in their big space suit.
Okay.
And they clean the glass
and
to help save.
It.
And then they start walk. There's a hill, and they start walking over the hill, and everyone can watch them, and they end up falling over and dying.
Okay.
And they keep saying that they are trying to get the suit to be better so that they can survive longer, mm-hmm. but no one knows if that's actually happening. So, Jules is called upon to come out of mechanical and be the next sheriff, which is a very important job. Right when she gets pulled in to be a sheriff, the current sheriff gets killed.
Okay.
And the mayor gets killed.
Mm.
And there's a big mystery about what's happening. Jules starts to question things. There are secret messages going back and forth. They figure out how much the IT department is doing versus what people think their role actually is. And Jules decides that she wants to go out.
Okay.
And so she goes out to clean. Everybody's watching her. And instead of cleaning, she walks straight over the hill.
Okay, cool.
And they don't know where she's gone.
Okay.
So this whole story is about this society that's running when you would only need a little branch to stick in the spokes and it throws the entire thing off. Because if mechanical starts not believing in the silo,
mm-hmm.
they control a lot. If IT doesn't believe in the silo, if the farmers don't believe in the silo, it throws the entire thing off. So it's this idea of this kind of fake utopia that's been built, kind of like in the Great Transition,
mm-hmm.
but also with the questioning of, is this real? Is this all we have? And is there more out there?
And do I just have to ask this, and if you can't answer it,
yeah.
Okay, but when she goes outside, mm-hmm. then does the book follow what happens to her?
Yes.
Okay.
And then the next book is going to continue on there, and so on.
Wow.
And
so will you on. Read the next book?
I will. I might have to wait. They're all almost 600 pages.
Ooh.
Oh.
Wow.
They're really big.
Well, that's pretty interesting because you, didn't you start listening to it?
I did.
And then you got the book and you were done in a flash because uh-huh. you sent me a picture of it.
I
couldn't believe it.
I got so entranced in this book that I was both listening to it and reading it. So okay. I would listen to it. And then when I'd get home, I literally would fly through and figure out where I'd left off, which chapter, and start reading. Then I'd get in the car to go pick up someone from mm-hmm. practice. And I'd start listening.
Okay.
And I just couldn't stop
because
it was so propulsive.
Love it. And it's a good way to read a book in a hybrid way like that. Mm-hmm.
And I don't usually go well from one to the other, but I mean it was so good. So I am going to read more and I really want to watch the series
mm-hmm.
Because it just looks like it really follows the story.
I can think of a lot of people that I know that would like this series.
And I really just love the world they built. Mm-hmm. It's just so interesting to me.
That's very, you know, it kind of puts me in mind, it's a little bit of The City of Ember. It's a kid's book.
Yeah.
But
I agree.
That kind of closed world where they're mm-hmm. living underground and they don't know what's out there.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess in City of Ember, they don't really even know that there is anything else.
Yeah.
But interesting.
Well, they're noticing programs that are made that are secret, and they're wondering if even The View is actually what The View is.
Oh,
I mean, okay. They're just getting to, once they start questioning, though, it has to be very secretive because people start to die. People start to get sent out as cleaners. Mm. It's very dangerous.
What a good series to start.
I know. I'm really excited to read the second. And that was Wool by Hugh Howey.
Okay, that sounds fab.
He actually wrote some other series too, Sand and some other things. I haven't really looked too much into it because I'm way into this one, but it was very, very good.
Okay.
So I hope you enjoy it.
I'm going to recommend that to some people that I know. Okay. Let's get into Fire in the Canyon by Daniel Gumbiner, which came out this past October in 2023. He also wrote a book called The Boat Builder, which I want to read. Fire in the Canyon is his sophomore novel. I loved this book. And I picked it from a shelf of new fiction at the library just based on the cover. The cover is really, really great. The Boat Builder has a similar style cover. This story is just, it's top-notch literary fiction. It's so good. And it's the story, so it's different from what we've talked about because this is not a world, you know, that's in the future. This is right now. Okay. It's not kind of a dystopian world.
Okay.
So it's the story of a California grape grower and his family whose way of life is completely turned around when wildfires become the norm in their community. Our main character, Ben, served some time in prison for growing cannabis, but he's now devoting his time to his vineyard and his sheep. He's married to Ada, who is a writer who has published this wildly popular novel, and she's currently working on another, which she thinks is even better. And this, she and her writing is going to play a big part in the story. Okay. They also have an adult son, Yoel, who is kind of semi-estranged from his father for reasons around his father growing the cannabis and going to prison.
Okay.
At a very formative time in his life. But he's come home for a time. So this wildfire comes through and it forces the family to flee and they have to make some very, very life-changing decisions. This book, and that's just kind of like it in a nutshell. It's so much deeper than that. It has really complex and flawed characters. I really enjoyed getting to know them. The way that they grow and change is remarkable. Their relationships are so layered and so fascinating and so real, especially the one between the father and the son, Ben and Yoel. The thing I appreciated the most was that even though mistakes have been made in the past, and they were big mistakes, and they continue to be made, and it's just kind of like some of the mistakes are just misunderstandings, and you know how it shows how the past really influences what we see of a person now.
Yeah.
Especially between a parent and child.
I was going to say, especially a kid looking to his father.
Right. And but just under it all, these people really love and care for one another, and they do the hard work. They don't write each other off. Mm-hmm. And that's so good. The climate change aspect with the continuing and worsening wildfires is well done, and you can just hear and see and smell and feel the effects on the family and on their vineyard, their animals, and their whole community. The descriptions are just vivid, and some of the scenes are really urgent and suspenseful, and these include some of the actual fires and some of the results of the fires, and it gets you thinking about what you would do if your entire way of life, your home, your job, your loved ones, your friends, your possessions, everything that you're accustomed to is threatened in this way. What would you do? And there might be some things you could do about it, you know, some changes that you could personally make or in your vineyard or with your animals, with your land. But on the other hand, they might be too big to tackle for just you or even for your little community. So could you adjust and adapt and find some new things to do?
Right.
Or would you need to start over? And how would that work?
Right. You can't always just go start over.
Right. And so these are all questions that our characters, all of them, face. Yeah. So Ben, Ada, and Yoel, plus some great secondary characters that come into the story. And it's just, I love it.
I remember you being done with this book. We'll often text each other. Finished this.
Yes.
Loved it.
I read this mostly on an airplane. and I just couldn't put it down. I love the people in this little quirky community and how they were connected to the land. Mm-hmm. And as a bonus, there are a lot of wonderful, mouthwatering descriptions of food and wine that they share together, because this is very much about community.
Right, it sounds like it.
So good. It's a beautiful story, and it's Fire in the Canyon by Daniel Gombiner, and I hope that every person reads it.
It sounds really good.
Really good.
Just one of those thoughtful, just thoughtful books.
Yeah.
That you can sit with for a little bit.
Yeah, with the character change and a little bit of excitement with the fires.
Right.
So it's got a little bit of everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds great. So what do you have in your hand right now? Climate change? Climate disasters?
No. And you're going to be shocked when I tell you what it is. I loved it. Scythe by Neil Schusterman. Came out in 2016. It's the first in a 3-book series, and it's fantasy.
Yes.
So are you shocked?
Okay, I am shocked. Woohoo. And I haven't read it yet.
Oh. And I think Grace, your daughter, would love it as well.
Yes.
So I know you're also going to be shocked that I can't wait to read the next book.
That is.
And I went to the library, and it wasn't in.
No.
And I know who has it. It's the son of one of our bookish friends. And also, I didn't have him, but I had his older brother in fourth grade. And so I know he has it out because she had put a comment on Instagram. So I'm going to wait for him to return it. And then he can get the third book. And then when he returns that, I'll get the third book.
Taking turns. Sharing is caring with your
isn't
books.
Isn't it? So it's YA, but it's in the vein of books like The Hunger Games that don't read like typical YA novels, right?
Yeah.
So I think anyone would enjoy this, adults and young adults. The world is similar enough that it's really easy to get into, and I guess those are the kind of fantasy books that I can really get into.
Yeah.
In this world, disease, war, poverty, all the bad things have been conquered. And scythes, so S-C-Y-T-H-E-S, are selected to keep the population under control because people aren't going to die in regular ways. You can also do rewinds. So when you get to a certain age, if you decide, I don't really like the way I look anymore, you can rewind yourself back to look like you're 20 or 30 or whatever you want.
Right.
So I think there's a number that you can't go under, though.
Okay.
So they're these people, the scythes are people who are specially selected, and they have to apprentice and pass tests in order to be in this honored, respected, and feared role. And it's really an important role, too, because it keeps humanity at a good level. So they're not going to overrun the earth.
I have a feeling about how, though.
Well, yes. Well, I know you're going to think they have scythes. Right?
Yeah.
They don't.
Oh.
I mean, some of them might.
Okay.
But they have their, that's they can their do name. It however they want.
But they're going to kill, that's how they're keeping
that's
people.
What they do. They take people's lives. So that's their whole thing. They have to choose people to kill. They're not given the names of people.
Oh.
They have to choose them.
Okay.
So in this book, our two main characters, Citra and Rowan, are two teens. They're selected to be apprentices to the same scythe, which is really out of the ordinary because normally a scythe would just have one apprentice.
Okay.
Neither one of these teens wants to take on the lifetime role of a scythe. They don't want to do it. But they have to. And they have to learn how to live with the responsibilities of taking a life and the emotions that their actions will cause. So when, and I will say that the scythe, his name is Scythe Faraday, he is an excellent scythe and a good person. And these are not, they're not supernatural beings. They're just people. So when an unexpected event upends their training, they're thrown into very uncertain futures and both have a very different path now.
Okay.
This is really page turning and you cannot wait to see what will happen next. It moves along. It's it's just very compelling.
So this is why you need number two. That's that feeling of need.
I really want to get number two. I do know another library where it's in.
Okay.
So I might drive there and get it. I liked learning about all the intricacies of being a scythe and how mm-hmm. each must develop their own ways of doing things. It's interesting to watch where the training takes each one of these mm-hmm. characters, Citra and Rowan. It's to very different places, physically and emotionally.
Oh.
And of course, there are some scythes who are not in this for the intended purpose, you know, for the greater good, and they just embody evil. So this makes for a great story. There are some scythes mm-hmm. that want to be the story and want to be known. Mm-hmm. I mean, when scythes walk down the street, people kowtow to them because they don't want to be selected. Right. So I guess they do one of two things. They either run, hoping that they can mm-hmm. escape, but a scythe isn't supposed to just be random. A scythe is supposed to know who they're coming for.
Okay.
So they either do that or they are, you know, saying, oh, honored scythe, you mm-hmm. know, can I put this umbrella over you?
Mm-hmm.
Can I, oh, here's a book I just got from the library. Please, will you, may I make something for you, mm-hmm. do something for you?
Right, you have because, both sides of
yes,
humanity and how they've handled that.
Very mm-hmm. scary to see a scythe coming down your street. So if you're late to the party like me, get your hands on this. You're going to love it. You'll be happy you did. That's Scythe by Neil Schusterman.
Amazing. And please remember to subscribe and review our podcast. It really means a lot to us as we're trying to grow.
It does.
And share us with a friend.
So glad you joined us today. If you'd like some other titles that go along with this theme, check out our show notes from today's episode.
Please share this episode with a friend and check us out on Instagram at The Book Bumble. We'd love it if you would subscribe to our podcast. Join us next time with a new bundle of wonderful reads.
Until next time.